You may be seated. Since this microphone seems to be working, I'll preach from here. It's an honor to be invited to preach here on this day. This wonderful space is filled to the rafters with flowers, showing us the beauty of God's creation. And that was Henry Shaw's purpose in endowing this occasion. The preacher is supposed to direct our attention to discovering God in the beauty of the world that surrounds us. But actually, what I have to say today is part sermon and part story. To hold your attention, I think I need to break it up. So I'm going to start with a little bit of sermon, then I'm going to tell a story, and then I'm going to come back to the sermon. Can you follow that? The sermon is supposed to focus on finding God in the beauty of creation, and one of my favorite theologians gives us a way into that task. Maximus the Confessor, in one of his short little sayings, says, "The creatures are the gifts that the persons of the Trinity give to one another for the sheer delight of giving." Ooh, that's fun. He identifies the divine substance as self-gift. Each of the persons of the Trinity gives self to the others as delight. And then to share the delight beyond the Trinity, God has created. And the persons give the creatures to each other for sheer delight. So galaxies are gifts. Quantum fields are a delight. Trees are a delight. Solar systems are a delight. Lions and tigers and bears, in their very essence, are delights. Humankind, each of us. I feel like Oprah Winfrey. You are a delight, and you are a delight. Everything is a delight. And humankind was created to be the priest of creation, to offer all of those delightful gifts back into the divine life. We are made to join that perichoretic dance of self-gift, to make delightful gifts of ourselves and each other to God. And we are created to express the praise of the rest of creation for them, to offer them in joy to God. That is the purpose of the Eucharist, to give back creation to God as gift and then receive God's very life as gift to us. Okay, part one of the sermon. Remember that. Hold on to it. I was invited to preach today because of some of my experiences in Africa. One of the things I do as a hobby is I teach a few courses at Eden Theological Seminary, and Eden has a number of students each year from Africa. And since I'm the head of the Anglican House of Studies there, I end up with any Anglicans in my classes. One of my students came from the Diocese of Mpwapwa in Tanzania. I just love that word, Mpwapwa. Anderson and I eventually hit it off, although he told me that on the first day of class he couldn't understand my accent. I've never had anybody say that to me before. So he asked me to direct his master's thesis, and he wanted to write on the importance of food security as part of God's plan of salvation. The missionaries who had brought Christianity to Mpwapwa had focused almost exclusively on conversion, converting your soul so that you could get into heaven. And Anderson said that it's really hard to preach conversion as salvation when people don't have enough to eat. So the pastors needed to be trained to be able to read the scriptures differently and preach on the importance of food security. So he wrote a fine paper, and it was well received. And during our conversations about his paper, he learned that at Advent we have a vegetable garden and we donate the produce every year to a food pantry. And so he asked me to come to Mpwapwa to lead a pastor's conference. I mentioned the possibility to our bishop, who said he would pay for me to go, but he also wanted Pamela Dolan to go along. You remember Pamela Dolan? She was the rector at Good Shepherd, and they have a vegetable garden also. And so he wanted her to go with us as well. We took Anderson out to their garden at Good Shepherd and showed how they collected water off of their roof to water the vegetables, and Anderson was very excited. And so in September of 2017, we made our way to Mpwapwa for a four-day conference. Anderson had originally told me there would be 40 pastors there. There were 140 pastors attending. And it started on Tuesday, and by Tuesday evening, Pamela and I were worried. We could see them asking themselves, what do these white people know about gardening in Tanzania? A fair question. But along the way, we had met up with Dr. Ann Outwater, who wrote a book with Peter Raven, a past director of Shaw's Garden. Don't you love that connection to today? And her book was on the indigenous trees of coastal Tanzania. She's from Vermont, but she teaches health, community health at Muhimbili University in Dar es Salaam. So she agreed to join us for the conference, and she got there on Wednesday. She led several sessions on nutrition, on beekeeping, on fruit trees, and a number of other topics, and the pastors were rapt with her presentations. Whew, we weren't going to be so worried after all. One of the things that she said about fruit trees is that they create utu. Utu is a Swahili word that doesn't translate into English. It's something like the word Ubuntu. You can't possibly eat all of the fruit that your trees produce in a season, so you have to share it with your neighbor. And your neighbor, who has planted a different fruit tree, has to share his fruit with you. That creates utu, common good, I guess you could call it. But Anderson had wanted Pamela and I to teach the theology of earth care and food security. Anderson told us that global warming had shortened the rainy seasons in Mpwapwa so that growing crops was more difficult. And I also learned while I was there something that has troubled me ever since. For a developing country to receive aid from the International Monetary Fund or to borrow money from the World Bank, that country has to agree to a set of principles called the Washington Consensus. And one of those principles is to liberalize their markets by removing or lowering import tariffs, especially against European or American grain. For breakfast every morning in Tanzania, we had a hard-boiled egg and three slices of white toast. I'll bet you that wheat wasn't grown in Tanzania. We, of course, can afford to dump cheap grain on other markets, and it tears the bottom out of the local economy. So Pamela and I used the story of Joseph and Pharaoh to talk about the importance of food in God's plan of salvation. You know the story. Joseph's brothers sell him into slavery in Egypt, and after some thrills and spills, he ends up in the court of Pharaoh, interpreting a dream of seven good years and seven lean years. And so Pharaoh puts Joseph in charge of stockpiling grain from those seven good years. And when the bad years hit, Joseph takes to selling grain that Pharaoh has hoarded. First, he takes the people's money. Then the next year, their livestock. A couple of years later, their land. And finally, in the seventh year, the people sell themselves into slavery to buy grain. So Joseph has a hand in the enslavement of his own people. Some benefit at the expense of others. And when Moses leads the people out of Egypt, God provides for them manna in the wilderness with one specific rule. No one can hoard more manna than enough for the day. So salvation looks like food for the day with no one able to corner the market. The IMF begins to look a lot more like Pharaoh than salvation. We here in this country didn't do so much to abolish slavery as outsource it. Anderson also wanted us to talk about practical things that the pastors could teach to help their people work toward food security. So Pamela told the story of starting the garden at Good Shepherd and how the people there worried about what it would do to the water bill. And so one Sunday she preached a stewardship sermon about their roof. She said, "We have this big roof here, rain runs off of it, let's collect that water and use it for the garden." And then she led the 140 pastors on an exercise in asset mapping. We went out to an empty field there near the conference center, and we had them all write down what they saw in it as assets, and then as an exercise, what would you do with that field and the assets that you saw there? Turns out that an empty water bottle makes a pretty good drip irrigation thing if you bury it in the ground and fill it up. So they had some really interesting ideas. Then I asked them to read the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 in the wilderness and compare and contrast that to the Exodus story. They got the similarities: wilderness, food. And when I asked for the differences, one of the pastors shot up his hand and said, "Jesus asset mapped." Yes, indeed, bingo. And also, there were 12 baskets left over. This is enough, not just for the people in the wilderness, but for all of Israel. Okay, now I'm headed back to sermonizing. We ended the conference with a Eucharist. I had really wanted each of the pastors to bring a handful of seed from home, which we would then grind into flour to make the bread. But Anderson dragged his feet, and so that didn't happen. I then asked if we could use chapati, which is an Indian flatbread common in the region, and he hemmed and hawed a couple of days, and finally I said, so are we going to use chapati? And he then told me what the problem was. The missionaries had brought those little thin wafers, you know, the kind that just dissolve on your tongue. You weren't supposed to chew Jesus. I insisted, and Anderson relented, providing that we also bless some wafers just in case some of the pastors wanted them. So in my sermon, I preached about how Jesus took whatever was at hand and made it into enough for all. But it had to be what we had on hand. This isn't bread from the sky. This is our bread. I connected the Eucharist with Jesus feeding in the wilderness. He takes what they have, blesses it, breaks it, gives it back, and it becomes more than enough. I told them that was what we were doing with the Eucharist, taking what we had, blessing it, and giving it back. Only four pastors took the wafers. The rest of them took the chapati. So have you ever thought about what goes into the bread that we eat? One summer when my kids were little, we grew tomatoes in the backyard. They didn't really like vegetables until then. And they loved those tomatoes, warm in the sun, right onto the plate. And so one night I asked them what they were eating. Duh, Dad, tomatoes, was the reply. Yup, I said, but what are they made of? We finally figured out that they're made of sunshine, water, dirt, CO2, and our labor. Gifts from God and our husbandry over those gifts. Our return of those gifts to God. That's what we're eating. So food security really is salvation. What we offer to God in the Eucharist is the whole of creation, rain, a gift the persons give for the sheer delight of giving, air, which is there for the sheer delight of it. And if you think about it, any element heavier than helium came from a supernova. We offer bread and wine. We return the whole creation, our husbandry of it. That's what the word dominion means in the creation story. Back into the divine dance. What a delight. Now, a little more storytelling and then I'm done. Anderson is the dean of the cathedral in Mpwapwa, which sits at the top of a hill. He wanted a demonstration garden so that they could begin to grow plants that worked good in that environment. But there was no suitable land on top of that hill. So he talked to a local government official who gave the cathedral a decent plot of land at the bottom of the hill in exchange for them replanting native trees on that hilltop. So Anderson went to Dar es Salaam and met again with Dr. Ann, who told him what kinds of trees to plant and where to get them. And then Anderson got some cisterns, began to collect water off the roof of the cathedral, run it down a pipe to the garden, and water that garden with rain from the roof of the cathedral. Five other parishes in Mpwapwa have begun these reforestation projects. It stops erosion. The European powers pretty much stripped the hillsides bare, and what they didn't take, the natives used for fuel. It also retains moisture in the soil and in the atmosphere. In other words, it helps reverse the effects of global warming. Anderson desperately wants me to come back in July and see these gardens and forests. I hope I can make it. But I want you to understand, these efforts are being undertaken by people who don't always get enough to eat, but they see the beauty. They understand utu, delight, the juice of a ripe orange dripping down your chin, and the joy of sharing it with your neighbor. God has created us for delight, and when we hoard, we die alone, like the man in the parable. But when we offer ourselves, our labor, our food, and the whole creation back to God in delight, God gives us the divine self for our very food. What could be more utu? Amen.